This episode is brought to you by Hero Forge. There is no better gift for a gamer than a custom miniature of their beloved TTRPG character. So this holiday season, take the guesswork out of gift giving and treat your players to a digital gift card to Hero Forge. Hero Forge offers fully customizable tabletop miniatures with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from, all within your browser. You can make minis in a variety of materials, including premium unpainted plastic and color standees, and they even offer downloadable model files so you can 3D print your unique designs at home. And for the dice lovers in your party, never fear, Hero Forge has you covered with their custom dice, which lets you put your hero inside the very D20 that will help lead you to glory. Visit heroforge.com to send your players a digital gift card and let them build the heroes of their dreams.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
Today, we are sitting down with Kendrick Smith, podcaster, game designer, and producer behind the award-winning actual play podcast, Tales Yet Told. Kendo, welcome to the show.
Whoa.
Welcome.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
We are so excited to have you.
A couple of weeks ago, Elliot and I were going over the next group of people we should bring on Talk to the Table. And at some point, Elliot said like, oh, we haven't had Kendo on yet. And I was like, we haven't had Kendo on yet?
Well, I'm glad that was the reaction more so than, ugh, Kendo, I guess.
I was like, oh, wow. it's amazing how much podcast bleed there is between the number of shows that we make. That I just assume everyone's been on everything.
That you know,
and you have certain kinds of conversations in person where you're like, well, no, we did a podcast together because we're both podcasters and we talked.
I remember that 30 to 45 minutes we spent talking about our deepest feelings about games.
Now that I think about it, none of us were wearing headphones, and that feels weird. There must have been some like weird like cross mic bleed. Anyway, this is all podcast inside baseball.
So, Kendo, we wanted to have you on the show to talk about how you think about creating actual play, the way you approach systems specifically, and ultimately how you're using all that to create this fascinating shared world, shared universe of the Sublime. And so I think that the Sublime is where I want to start. So for the uninitiated,
oh boy,
what is the Sublime?
Sublime County is a setting that I made alongside my friends. It's not just like a thing that's purely birthed from my own brain, but it originated as the setting for Tales Yet Told's first season, Strangers in the Wood. And it is a world just outside of our own where children typically around the ages of like 7 to 15 find themselves wandering into, and on the other side in this strange autumnal forest-like world that also kind of looks like the American 80s is a paradise. It's a place where everyone has a purpose, everyone has a role, so to say, and in that, there is, you know, there is beauty, there is structure. And of course, this wonderful paradise is ruled over by an omniscient, ever-judging entity that determines your role and your place in the world and guides this world. And, you know, if you don't do what that entity wants, he turns you into an animal in the most body horror a way possible, long, slow, painful, and alienating to yourself and society. And like, but that's only if you're like a bad person, right? And like, don't do what you're told.
Yes. Those the two mark things of that a always bad equal each other.
Yeah. It's a setting that started off as very deeply inspired by Over the Garden Wall. Our first season, we used the first edition of Babes in the Wood by Adam Voss from World Champ Game Co. If you're looking for that first edition anywhere, I don't think it's available at all. He wiped it off the map. I don't know why the second edition exists, but there is, God, it started off as me wanting to I guess, like, in the way that a lot of Powered by the Apocalypse games are, right, I was trying to emulate this thing that I had become attached to, the show Over the Garden Wall, and trying to pick apart its pieces and, like, why it was made and, like, the different, like, themes and history that it brings into itself, and then try to make a more modern version of that, right, in the world of Over the Garden Wall. It very much hits on this old nostalgia of, like, colonial Americana, right? Of, like, pastures and farmlands and, like, oh, this great, wonderful world that is yet to be explored kind of deal. And I was thinking about the role of nostalgia in that, and also nostalgia's role in capitalism and nostalgia's role in fascism, right? And so true, and like around that time that we made Strangers in the Wood, like Stranger Things was really big. I mean, hell, Stranger Things is still big right now going into its final season, right? And like, just like, there's a lot of 80s nostalgia that started popping up in like late 2010s, early 2020s. And like throughout, like, you know, the 2000s, because all of the people that lived through there are now the people making our media. And they're like, hey, man, I remember when I was a kid, I'm going to make movies about it. But so much of that feels and felt forced to me, in that it is a tool to and used to sell a product. Oh man, look how wild and free we were back in the 80s. Remember when we were on our bikes going to places? Like, this is a marketing selling point, right? That is used, that so few of us actually lived through or did live through and are at the right age to spend money on wanting to relive those moments rather than the current moment. And so in thinking about nostalgia, I was like, okay, I want to take this idea of like 80s nostalgia and break it down into like, what is it being used for? On like a capitalistic base, what is it being used for in an authoritarian, like fascist sense? But also, what does it actually give to us, right? We spend money on it for a reason. What is it that we're looking for out of it? And so the Sublime is kind of born out of that idea. And then also being like, okay, what were the 80s actually like for the real people that lived there? Taking very heavy influences from a lot of queer movements, the AIDS epidemic and crisis, and, you know, gender roles and class divides, things of that nature, were very, very core ideas that I was taking into it when we first started our game. And then it only kind of evolved from there as the players and mechanics got involved and added new ideas, and their characters focused on specific aspects of this world. It really kind of molded what it would eventually become and what it is now, I think.
There's so much good stuff in there that like, I think ties into this conversation. But I want to ask one more sort of broad question, which is that why was actual play the medium for this world? Like, this is like, you know, you've got a lot to say about these themes that I think one might say, oh, why didn't you write a book? Why didn't you write a TV show? What was it about actual play that let this world kind of become what it was supposed to be?
I mean, honestly, because... Oh, so part of this is like, why did we do an actual play to begin with? I'll start with that. So I went to school for like digital storytelling and film. Primarily, my deal is I love television. I did web series in like college. I've done a feature film, and then I was like slowly starting to get into like doing just more screenwriting. And like also during the pandemic, I was like, maybe I'll do comics. Comics seem cool. And here I am, having not done a comic. But it was like, it was around the time of the pandemic where I lost, and I know this is like every fucking person's like story about why they've done an actual play, right? Where I lost out on a lot of the community and the like things that I was doing in my real life, like doing like improv comedy, filmmaking, all of these things that I didn't really have access to anymore, partially because of the pandemic, partially because I got into a car accident that made me have to move a bunch and then like put me in a very isolatory space. And I started listening to Friends at the Table at the like suggestion of my partner's sibling. And I was already like kind of like I'd been listening to actual plays for like since I started playing D&D, like in high school, I was listening to like Acquisitions and I was like watching the Acquisitions Incorporated streams, all of the stuff that Chris Perkins was doing with like the one shots with like the Adult Swim cast and like all of this other stuff. Around this time, I was also listening to the show like Drunkards and Dragons. I think they go by a different name now, but it was like a fourth edition D&D podcast. And like, I was just kind of like, it was a thing that I was cognizant of, but it wasn't until I listened to Friends at the Table that I really kind of began to understand the playing of games and telling stories through it as this kind of art form, as a like, as a valid medium for intentionally telling a story. Because everything up until then was like either a marketing thing with Acquisitions Incorporated, right? Or it was just like a bunch of people like playing D&D with their friends. And like, yeah, even like, even by the time I started listening to Friends at the Table, I was already watching like Dimension 20 and like NADPOD and things of that nature. But still, like, there was an aspect of it that just felt playful more than intentional storytelling in some ways. And not that those things are like one is heavier than the other, but just like a different frame of focus. And it was listening to Friends at the Table and seeing what they were doing with games and how they were building worlds that made me go, well, I could do this. And it genuinely just started to change the way that I was playing games at the time, the few games that I did have. And when I think there was just a day where I had gotten a new job that was paying me more than I had ever been paid before, and I had more free time than I had ever had, where I was like, I want to be making things again. You know, I was making film. I was, you know, writing at a point, but like I had kind of stopped after my move to Texas. And then I got this job where I finally had the freedom to do it again. I was like, well, what do I want to be doing? Filmmaking is so expensive, and I didn't have a camera at that point, so it's just like even more expensive. And it's like, well, I could do podcasting. I've kind of done test playful podcasts before with like dog watching movies and like a fanfic reading one that exists purely on a hard drive, never to be heard by human ears. But they were fun, and I was like, well,
come on.
I'll send you all specifically.
And we'll put them out on the Talk of the Table Patreon. So if you want to become a patron,
you know,
for just
you
$5
could,
a month, you can hear stuff that Kendo does not want out there.
No, it's not even that I don't want out there, like, because I think it's fun. It's just, it has no reason to exist out there, because nothing will ever come of it. But it was just like I had pulled all of these skills, right, from filmmaking, from going to college and doing a little audio storytelling, that made me feel like, well, maybe I could do this. And it was purely just on a whim at that point. It was like, well, I want to make something. This seems like a thing that I could do and something I'm very interested in right now. Let's give it a try. From that, that is the only reason why the world exists, because I was putting no thought into the world of the, like, the Sublime doesn't exist if I don't go, ah, I kind of want to make an actual play podcast, right? And that's purely why it exists. And it only could exist in the way that it does because it was one, because the act of playing a game and using mechanics to influence the kind of story that we were telling, like it only exists in the form that it does because of that, and truly only exists because I one day said, hey, let me give this a go.
When you first started making that like first podcast, like when you're first pulling in, like, let's get the mics for the very first episode, did you know at that point that you wanted this to be such an expansive universe?
Oh, no. No.
When did that turn come that you were like, oh, I've enjoyed playing this world so much, let's keep playing in it, but in different and interesting and new ways?
Yeah, so the first season of Strangers in the Wood, we play a total of 4 games, I want to say. Because there's the main game of like Strangers in the Wood, but even throughout playing it, I always knew that I wanted to play other games to explore certain things of characters. And that is straight from Friends at the Table. Because there's a point in between one of the arcs where they bring in a like murder mystery game where they all like start, like there's like one arc is ended. They're all coming together and then murder mystery happens. They're deputized by this like other force that comes into the city, and they use some of the mechanics from Dungeon, like they use some of their abilities from Dungeon World into this game that they kind of homebrewed out of one of like the Sherlock Holmes like TTRPGs. And they tell this whole story and then they go back to Dungeon World. But the things in this like kind of micro story have such a lasting impact on who these characters are, purely, and like all of that comes from like this one specific scenario and the way that they chose to go about exploring the story using this other game. And like that was hugely influential, and then going and then keeping going, and like they used like the Quiet Year and like all of these other things to help build upon the world. And I took that with me into my home game of like, oh, okay, we're like in between seasons. Hey, one of you is getting a book that is the story, history of the city. And then we just played The Quiet Year. It's like, oh, that's the book you read. And it's like things like that became immediately influential to how I chose to play games. And so like there was never an idea for me that the Sublime would be as expansive as it is now, taking in all these other people and all these other stories. But from the get-go, it was always like other games were going to help us tell the one story that we were doing. And then I think it was probably, so this is some Tales Yet Told history I don't get to talk about often, but we had a live stream series called Prayers in the Static that from its inception, me and my co-host Ibrahim were always like, we are doing an expansive sci-fi setting that we're going to build the timeline for, and then we were going to play a bunch of games with a bunch of people to help build out this world and like tell a bunch of stories within this timeline. And so that setting actually was like way, and we, that was like, we were still mid Strangers in the Wood when we were doing Prayers in the Static. It was just like our live stream thing and then the podcast thing. And some of those Prayers in the Static episodes live on our RSS feed. I think it's specifically the Echo game with Nathan and Irene. But like the expansiveness of playing games within the setting was always kind of a part of what we were doing. But it's only more recently that I've thought of the Sublime as being potentially as expansive as I did that sci-fi setting.
There's a word you threw out in there about like YAP and like the idea of like being able to approach stories with intention is like, you know, intention is one of our hot button words that we always like to bring up on the podcast. And like, it's when we set out to make the network, we were like, what's one of our litmus tests for shows that come on the network is like they have an interesting intention behind why they're making their show that like we vibe with. And so Tales Yet Told, for anybody who doesn't know, listening, is part of Many Sided Network for that reason, among others. But I want to kind of approach this idea of it's become more and more intentional what you're doing of expanding the Sublime into other systems. And I'm curious, when you're now developing these new seasons would be an accurate way to maybe put it, or yeah, series, sub-series. Does it start with game? Does it start with theme? Does it start with plot? Like, or is it a, you know, chaotic mix of all three?
So I can use Voices in the Wood, I think, as a good like starting point for this, because this was the first time where I had the idea, oh, okay, I'm going to take this core idea of the Sublime that we made in Strangers in the Wood, and I'm going to expand it and give that mic to other people to also help, you know, grow this world and show its many different parts, right? For that season, the game did come first. I saw Ken Lowry post about Void 1680 AM, and I was like, whoa, this seems so cool. I want to do something with this. And originally, that idea was going to be a Prayers in the Static idea, because we had a character, Sunlight Askew, who was our kind of narrator radio show person who, like, did all of, like, the coming up next, we're talking about blah, 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 our kind of, like, Tom from Toonami kind of vibe. And so it was like, oh, we had a built-in radio show into the setting. We can explore the setting using this character. And so it was originally going to be that. But it was like around that time that Prayers in the Static kind of fell apart a little bit. And so I still had this idea, and I'm like, well, I want to kind of expand. I like this concept of using this game to expand a world in a kind of Welcome to the Magic Tavern kind of way. And I was like, well, we could do something in the Sublime. And I immediately started thinking of a character of like, okay, who, like, I was like, okay, who's going to be doing this and then why? And like the world kind of built out from there and the story kind of built out from there. But even the, I would say the themes of Voices in the Wood didn't really start to come out until play. It was very emergent. Like, I had a core idea of like, oh, this is going to be a story about this young person trying to live out their role in the best way that they can, trying to connect with other people as an entertainer, but also bringing in this kind of like subversive aspect of like the music is coming from our world, which was both like, I think a fictional aspect of it, but also born out of necessity. Because fictionally, if it's like, well, this isn't from our world, right? Any music that is being played is like, oh, this is music from the Sublime, which tonally couldn't be true because of the certain aspects of those of that kind of music. And so it's like, okay, this comes from the outside world. And then fictionally, it just kind of emerges from there. Like a lot of what the Sublime is kind of comes out of necessity based on what games give me, which is what I love about it. And for that one, the game came first. For Our Lives in the Wood, the season that is actively coming out now, right, which plays a different game for every episode, it kind of varies a little bit. Sometimes I have the concept for an episode and then I'm like, okay, let's find a game to match with that. And then sometimes it's like I find the game first and then I'm like, okay, cool. Like for our first episode, where we use The Time We Have by Elliot Davis. I don't know if you've heard of it. I hear it's great.
I've heard of it.
I hear it's great. It was
what a game.
What a game. I saw you post about it and immediately was like, I need to fucking play this game. And I immediately was like, oh, I could put this into the Sublime. And because we were coming off the tail end of like Voices in the Wood, I already had like, ooh, I know a tragic event that could have turned someone into something. And like, there was just a synchronicity there that ended up working really, really well, right? And I was like, okay, cool. This is the idea for this episode. We're going to have two siblings, one of them turning into an animal and the other one having to listen to it. And then the themes of that episode kind of emerge through play as we discover things. But the second episode of Our Lives in the Wood, where we play Nighthawks, the concept came first. I wanted to do, I love bowling. That's just a thing about me. I'm trying to get back into bowling. If anyone wants to go bowling and lives near me, hey, let's figure something out. but I wanted to do three friends going bowling, right? And it first started, we were going to use, I think it's just called Three Dudes Go Bowling. I found it on Itch. I really wish I could remember. And it's like a, nice. It's yeah. like a Big Lebowski kind of game. And I was like, okay, I kind of like this idea. But then we ended up switching to Nighthawks because, I think just the form of Nighthawks was a little more solid. And also was a game that I had played and a game I really liked and a game I wanted to do again. And, you know, from there, I was like, okay, I want to do a bowling game where there's going to be like some tension between people. Who are my three friends? Who are my two friends that I know are incredibly funny and we would be able to like bash against each other against the walls, right? And so concept came first, then game, because we found Nighthawks. And then the themes of it again emerge as we play, which I think is kind of the cycle there. Either the game or the concept comes first, but the themes and the actual meat of like, what is this about, comes from the act of intentionally playing and trying to discover that as we go along.
And there's another element in there. There's theme, game, and then cast, I think, is a interesting thing I want to pull on, because you said, like, you know, you thought about Find My Two Funniest Friends for this. And I want to jump back to Voices in the Wood, because this had such an expansive cast. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I found delightful in listening to it is that they all felt so of the Sublime. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I feel like, and I'm curious, like, was that because you were very intentional about casting? Was it conversations you had before people came? Or did people just bring these characters that like that fit nicely because you had kind of created this setting that inspired them? Where did that kind of cohesion come from?
I think there's a mix of this, because some of the cast had listened to Strangers in the Wood before I brought them onto Voices in the Wood. Some of those people had really, like, I gave them the setting and they were like, I know what I'm doing. And then some of those kind of molded a little bit more through conversation. When it came to casting for it overall, there was just kind of I didn't want to do open casting, mostly because, and this is just like a feeling that I have about my show in general, not like everyone's show, because I think open casting as a practice is good if that is a thing that you're looking for. But for Tales, it's a little too close to my heart to want to maybe risk on someone that I don't know, right? Not saying that like those people aren't going to be talented, but like the stuff that we deal with is like a little heavy sometimes. And I also, when playing, want to kind of like know that I can have a connection with the person that I'm playing so that we can understand where each other are going, which is just hard to do with a person I've never played with before or a person that I had never interacted with before. Because there were a lot of people in Voices in the Wood. Well, that's my first time playing a game with them whatsoever. But they were people that I knew either through like long-term interaction or just like having like been like close friends with them. And so there's definitely a mix of experience in there that I think is as good execution-wise because the setting of the sublime is allowed to be so multifaceted. There's a vagueness that I like to give to the sublime. Not a vagueness, I don't think that's the right word, but there is a flexibility to the sublime that I really enjoy because it can hold so many genres and so many truths within it that it can really kind of do whatever I need it to do in the moment. And I think Voices in the Wood is a testament to, like, there's so many different tones going on there, from like grim to caring to kind of funny to like deeply horrific. And they all kind of fit because the sublime has space for that. And everything that everyone brought just kept adding to it, right? Because the more their characters bring to it tonally or content-wise and like world-building-wise, the more it can kind of justify more things being added onto it, because it's like, oh, well, if this can exist, then this can exist, and then this can exist. And that's kind of how I like building the world.
And then in terms of with so many players and with the universe of the Sublime now like having just grown to be so many, so it's such a multifaceted thing. How do you approach onboarding new players into the universe so that they fit, but also so that they have as clear a perception of the universe as possible so that they can move within it as freely as they want?
Session zeros, baby. Session zeros. And like, there's purely like, for anyone that I'm onboarding at this point for like doing a thing within the Sublime, there's always a portion of my session zero where I'm like, okay, this is what the Sublime is. This is kind of like what it means to be someone who is cursed in this world. And like, here are the possibilities of like how you might exist within this world. And then I just kind of give it to them. I'm like, hey, you can tell me whatever your role is. Make it up. I don't care. What does it mean to you is more important. What animal would you turn into if you are cursed? And I think, and then from there, people start having a lot of questions. Some of them I already have answers to. Some of them are new questions. And I come up with an answer as we're talking about it. And so it truly is just that kind of conversation about, hey, what is it that we're doing? What is it that you're interested in? And how can I make that fit into this world? Or how can I add to this world in a way that makes sure that you can fit inside?
And then kind of turning from player onboarding over into a similar question of audience onboarding. Now this has become such a large, expansive universe again. There are a bunch of different entrance points. How do you go about onboarding an audience if they're not starting at episode one, but are rather starting at like different entrance points to different series?
That's a great question that I have no answer to. And genuinely, something that I haven't put a ton of thought into, right? Not in a way that I think like, oh, I don't care that the audience can follow up, but like something like, I don't know. And I think it's something that I do need to eventually find an answer to. I've thought about doing like one of those graphs of like, hey, you want to get into Sublime? Listen, if you care about this, listen to this. I've thought about doing stuff like that. I don't know what would be the most effective at this point. I think generally if someone's like, hey, I want to start listening to your thing, where should I start? I tend to point them towards Voices in the Wood because I think it's the most accessible world building wise. No, I shouldn't say the most accessible world building wise. I think it's a really good entrance point because there is such a variety of experiences within it that I think if you were to just listen to it, you can understand there's a lot of things going on in this world. And there are, and like a lot of it is so deeply fucked. And there is this like kind of weird tension between people wanting to be a part of this world and people who are maybe trying to find some kind of freedom for themselves. I think it is a nice, good, like, if you listen to this, you get what the Sublime is. But if this is a situation where it's like, okay, you're kind of interested in this world and you want to see where it started, and like, if you want to see the evolution of the world, I think starting at Strangers in the Wood is great because you get to see the world as it's being built, right? You get to see us ask questions. Like, there's a lot that is assumed to be true in Voices in the Wood that is directly built in Strangers in the Wood, right? The aspect of what it's like being in school. What is it like for a person to be transformed, right? The truth that being cursed means that you're first, like the first stage of being cursed is that you start having this hallucination that tries to pull you further into the actions of like doing the thing that's going to make you transform, which is like the core aspect of the Time We Have episode from Our Lives in the Wood, and like a key aspect to Youngles' character in the first episode of Voices in the Wood is a direct truth built through play in Strangers in the Wood. So you get to see the evolution and then you get to watch it expand. So I guess at this point that would be like, if you're just interested in understanding what the world is and where it's at right now, watch Voices in the Wood, or I guess listen to Voices in the Wood. If you want to watch the world be built and then slowly grow into something that you couldn't have imagined at the prologue of Strangers in the Wood, watch Strangers in the Wood. And if you just want to get like a scatter shotgun of like the wildest shit going on in the Sublime, listen to Our Lives in the Wood, because that's as weird and wild as it gets at this point.
There's the tree right there. There's the graphic. All you got to do is just make it visual. Yeah, you got it.
Right there. Can I get the transcript of this so I can?
Yeah, totally. Oh, you just got to send us the podcast that you don't want out there yet.
Dang it. Okay, that's
the fine. Dog watching movies podcast, was that what you said?
It was called the Kill My Dog Cast.
it's watching dog movies with dogs in them.
It's watching it's not watching movies with where dogs die. It's called the Kill My Dog Cast because my film production company was called Kill My Dog Productions, partially because it became a thing that I would say in like if I was upset, right, where it's like you're playing a video game, you're getting dunked on, you're like, fuck, kill my fucking dog, dude. And it means nothing because I don't own a dog, right? So you can't kill it. But it's just like, it was a thing that I picked up from a friend that then got instilled and poisoned into me, and that I just kind of carried through because I thought it was kind of just a funny, weird thing that makes people go, what did you just say?
Don't worry about it.
Worry about it. But no, we were watching movies like Flying Ryan, the movie.
That American classic.
American classic Flying Ryan, which has a dog. As long as the movie had a dog, we would watch it. And there would be a specific segment about the dog.
Wow. I can't believe it didn't stick around.
It was just, we were recording with like seven people on a singular Blue Yeti, just like in a living
room. Oh, never mind.
It sounds great. No. It sounds better than you think it sounds. I guarantee you.
Wow.
All right.
Sorry. Yeah, you just said several of my podcast trigger phrases.
I know.
Oh. All right, pulling back in.
Getting back in.
Though I loved that trip to Kill My Dog Town. It's the talk of the
table. This episode is brought to you by Hero Forge. There is no better gift for a gamer than a custom miniature of their beloved TTRPG character. So this holiday season, take the guesswork out of gift giving and treat your players to a digital gift card to Hero Forge. Hero Forge offers fully customizable tabletop miniatures with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from, all within your browser. You can make minis in a variety of materials, including premium unpainted plastic and color standees, and they even offer downloadable model files so you can 3D print your unique designs at home. And for the dice lovers in your party, never fear, Hero Forge has you covered with their custom dice, which lets you put your hero inside the very D20 that will help lead you to glory. Visit HeroForge.com to send your players a digital gift card and let them build the heroes of their dreams.
Hey campers, have you heard of Season 5 of 5 GMs in a Trenchcoat from Inside the Tent? You haven't? Well, let us tell you about it.
A nice, green, natural regional park. This is Hidden Falls Regional Park. For our purposes in our world, it's a bit larger than it actually is. It is the summer of 1983, and it is all of your first time getting to stay at Hidden Falls.
We promise it's going to be a great time. It's going to be a story of three childhood friends going across the Americas in 1987 using Kids on Bikes, second edition. So grab a blanket, make some coffee. The first three episodes are available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Kendo, if we zoom out a bit from the sublime, from Tales Yet Told, I wanna ask you about your like broad actual play ethos, if you can put words behind it. How, when you go about producing an actual play, what is the ethos behind the work you do? And perhaps how has the sublime kind of informed that ethos?
Yeah. I think as of right now, whenever I'm thinking of like, okay, I want to do a new project, or, you know, I'm coming up with a new idea, or even ideas that people come to me with where they're like, hey, do you want to be in our thing, right? My first thought is always, is this interesting to me? What about this is interesting to me? If it is already an idea where I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds cool, right? Is this something that's interesting to me that is going to like spark my brain to start wanting to make things about it? Because at least for me, that's like, if I'm not interested in it, I'm not going to do it. That's just kind of who I am as a person. I don't do things that I don't want to do. Life is too short for that. And I think the next thing for me is always, okay, how can I expand on this idea? It's very flowy for each thing. I wish I had like a core ethos, right? Of like, this is why I create, right? I create because I want to. I create because it's a desire that I have and a hunger that I would like to satiate, making things. And there's like a certain aspect of me. There's a certain aspect where I guess I'm egotistical enough where I'm like, I want to be witnessed. In a way, I believe in this thing, or I'm doing this thing, and I want to share the experience of me doing that with other people. Not even necessarily for a specific reason, just because it's a thing that I want to do. And I think there are positive things that come from that, right? There are positive things about me being a genderqueer, sexually queer, black person making this kind of art, right? But I don't necessarily do that because of that. That just also happens to be true about me. And there are aspects of that that then make me go, well, because that is true about me, there are certain things I should be very intentional about and things that I should think through. I don't think I was always an artist that was very thoughtful in my approach to things. Not that I was like doing things unthoughtfully, but like I was just doing things because I wanted to, and I wasn't really, really thinking about them. And I think honestly, a lot of that changed like halfway through Strangers in the Wood, where I realized the kind of story we were telling. And I was there's a point midway through Strangers in the Wood where the show goes from like, okay, this kind of like fairy tale adventure, like horror adventure that's like also like kind of funny. It can be sad, but like it could be all these things, to being something that was like deeply, deeply tragic. And in acknowledging that, I had to go, oh, okay, what is this thing that we're doing? I have to start looking at all of the players that we have, all of the characters that we've made, and all the beats that we've set up and say, what is this story? And there was a point, like, post that where, like, my edgy high schooler side, I think, comes out a little bit. And partially, I think that had to do with, like, where we were all at in our lives and, like, what was going on in the world that, like, there's, like, a point in Strangers in the Wood that I have to warn people about where, like, there's a point where it gets sad and then it never gets happier from there. Like, until the end of the show, it just gets more depressing. And it's just like a truth about it, right? And like, and a lot of that was still very intentional, right? Because the things that I was wanting to explore was intentional. And the things that my players were wanting to explore was intentional. But we were also acknowledging just how fucked it was and how, like, terrible it was in directions that it was leading those characters and that the world was. And in coming back to the Sublime with Voices in the Wood, there was a very intentional choice, both by me, but also by one of the cast members who becomes very influential in the way that the Sublime exists now, Netta, who plays Jenna in Voices in the Wood, where I had a very intentional thought of, I want this world to be hopeful. Everything sucks. Everything is so bad. The world is deeply tragic and everyone is kind of forced to live through that. But there is light still to be had because people still exist. And as long as people exist, there will hopefully be struggle against whatever that oppressive force is. And wanting to acknowledge that and wanting to intentionally see that into the world through Voices in the Wood, did the world continue to change? And did it become like, it's not like everything's happy. If anything, I think it allowed me to want to explore even more, even darker, more fucked up things about the Sublime, knowing that there is a light in that there will always be people struggling against how bad this thing is. And I think that is kind of, I guess that has kind of become part of my ethos when trying to tell stories, right? I find myself more drawn to kind of deeply like fucked scenarios and deeply tragic stories about how the world and how people are changed by the world and forced to act in certain ways that then becomes violence on each other. But I think now I'm at a point where I want to view that through the lens of that this is the way the world exists. It is not the way that it necessarily needs to exist or will always exist as. And that's become a very, I think, important aspect to the kinds of things that I want to be telling in the future.
It is always easier to get to like darker places when there is that little ray of hope, because it makes it even more tragic. Like, if there's nothing to look forward to, it's just kind of darkness for no point. If there's that little spot of hope in the distance, then everything gets more tragic because it could go away.
Exactly, exactly. And then even in that, you start to learn, it starts to make you question, well, why is it this way, right? What are the pieces holding this together? And in that understanding that things could be better, you then begin to imagine, right, that kind of radical imagination of, well, what are the things that need to change in order for this to be better? What are the things, what systems are perpetuating these forms of violence? And that's kind of one of the great things that I love exploring about the Sublime is, like, there are so many ways that that world sucks and that, like, that world oppresses people that I think is very easy to attribute to the stranger. But if you take a closer look at it, it's mostly a lot of people perpetuating the violence of the stranger or enforcing it, even if they aren't being forced to do so. And, like, those are the kinds of things that I like picking apart and, like, trying to examine with the stories that I'm telling.
And thankfully, that has no parallels to the real
it's
world.
It's got no, just like One Piece, it's not political, I promise you.
It's not political.
Don't look at it too.
Non-political art.
No way.
Yeah, I think a thing I really enjoy about the way you talk about the way you make art is there's a real thoughtfulness that I admire in what you're talking about, where it's like, you're like, I don't think I have a design ethos, but then you kind of or AP ethos, but like you express this really beautiful ethos of like, I make because I want, but also here's like there's another layer. It's like you make because you want, but you also clearly have a sense of responsibility to the art and to the audience that yeah. I think is very good. I don't have a question. I just like it.
Yeah. Making art's fun. It's good.
Making art rules. It's the best.
I love it.
It's good stuff.
I'd like to keep doing it.
I would love to keep doing it.
And kind of on the subject of wanting to keep doing it, what do you look at as the future of the Sublime in actual play? And does it evolve outside of actual play? Does it stay in this form? And what does the future hold?
Oh, buddy. It exists in so many forms in my head. there. Fuck. I'm at the point where, like, if I say something, then it's true and it commit. Becomes a thing that people expect of me.
Commit on the pod.
I would love this to is what I make Elliot actually. Do.
I would love to commit to this, actually. One of the things that I want to do, and this started off as like an idea for like a live show at a convention that I think has now slowly evolved into a live production that like people like a live theatrical production. I have an idea for doing Cats in the Sublime where people who have been turned into cats as a part of their curse have created this kind of like weird community in that there is like this like one lead cat who has access to this artifact that can turn someone back into a human. And every year they come around, they do a little Jellicle ball and they perform. It doesn't have to be song and dance. It could be whatever the player wants to do using the TTRPG Jellicle ball. I really wish I could remember the name. Hold on, I can find it really quick. It's in my forever folder of games to use for Tales Yet Told. It's the Jellicle Chants by Sagoli. It is a beautiful game that is just roll on a table to decide what your color is, what like your coat, what your coat is. Roll to see if you're one of the villain cats who can take away the Jellicle Chants from one of the other cats. And then you all just kind of decide how you want to argue your case for being the Jellicle Chants to the GM. And then the GM just decides.
Hell yeah.
That's the whole, it's a talent show as a TTRPG with a judge. And so I want to do that as a live theatrical production. Of these people trying to argue for why they should be turned back into a human, why they should be given a second chance at life in the Sublime, and then give the audience the power to choose who gets to be human and who has to stay as a cat. And I think there's something deeply fascinating to me about like this concept existing within the world of the Sublime at all, but also like the idea of like, putting the audience in the role of having to choose who gets to be human and who doesn't. And like the kind of like weird line between it, right? Of like, these are people, assumedly, that they like they are arguing their case, which also just like cements a truth about the Sublime that's always been kind of vague of if people who have been turned into animals still have semblances of themselves or are they just fully an animal? It brings a certain questioning to that. I was like, well, it seems like they might. Is that true for everyone? Who knows? I love the I love being I love not answering questions. I love just giving them. But like that's something that I'm thinking about as like a future for Tales and like the Sublime. There is I just had a session zero yesterday with Rara from The Heart is a Dungeon, another many-sided podcast, about a long-term story set in the Sublime that's going to be on The Heart is a Dungeon. That Rara...
Breaking pod barrier.
Breaking pod barriers. It'll be the first Sublime story that exists, not on our show. Part of that is because Rara was like, hey, I kind of want to, you know, edit and sound design a thing. And I was like, cool. Awesome. I would love to not have to do that. but also part of it is because the content of it is more for Thyad than I think it is for Tales. It'll be a lot more intimate and a lot more reveling in the violence of the scenario. Part of it's in a romantic way, but like not in like a romanticization way of like, isn't violence beautiful and gory? Like kind of it's a little bit of that. But I also want to like really, really sit in like how deeply fucked it is that this world sometimes turns people into things that make them crave blood and violence. And like, what does that mean? And so like. My idea for the Sublime in the future is just to continue to expand and like figure out what like I have a whole timeline, not like a fully detailed timeline, but like there are eras of the Sublime that exist before the kind of current era that we've been, like this post-war era of the Sublime that we're kind of, but there's a pre-war era. There's like a Western expansion era of the Sublime. And then there's the video game era. Like there's so many things to explore about this world and like the way that the idea of it has changed the way how people act towards each other and like made them sacrifice things to have a chance at quote unquote paradise that I would love to play in the future. But time, money, and energy is somewhat limiting to those things. But they are things that I do want to explore. It's just figuring out when's the right time.
And then the Sublime, you know, setting book or game book.
I would love to do a Sublime setting book. At that point, like there are a bunch of eras, I could do multiple books. It would mean I would have to sit down and write things. And then the hardest thing about trying to make a Sublime source book, I think for me, is like questioning how much of Strangers in the Wood do I keep canon to its history? Do I keep it all canon? At what point in it do I like place the book? And like the possibility for the players to make it their own. Because I don't want to add too much of myself into it. Or I mean, all of it's obviously part of myself. But like, I don't want my stories to have to dictate, you know, the stories that someone else could take. And because it's a digital world, I could just say, hey, my world is just one simulation of what could possibly be happening in the Sublime. Whatever you're doing is a different simulation that the Sublime is running to try to see what its future looks like. I think that's a possible avenue that's has so many implications that I would have to figure out how I felt about it before I even said it, you know?
It's the thing that Die does, Die RPG, where like every game of Die is canon in the world of Die because they're all like different paths you could take. So it is canon, but also is totally not canon, which is a great little cheat code.
Great little cheat code.
So Kendo, the last question before we start wrapping this up, I want to ask is, let's say there's an actual play producer listening who is intrigued about this idea of like creating and maintaining and developing a shared world across their shows. Like, do you have like a piece of advice that you would give somebody who is interested in the kind of storytelling you've been doing with Tales Yet Told?
My first bit of advice is take notes. anything that you add can be true. Anything that you say, like, especially like the thing about like, setting canon when it comes to like things like actual plays, it's not canon unless you say it, right? If it is a thing that the audience or someone has heard, then it is true. Everything before that is just planning and ideas that you have. And so taking notes on the things that you do say aloud, and the things that games sometimes prompt you to say to make true about your world, keep notes of that. It's going to help make sure that everything is cohesive, right? But on like, actual like personal advice, I think the only way that the Sublime could be as expansive as it is because I understand at its core what the overall story is, right? I understand what the Sublime is, why it exists, and how it has come to be the way that it is. And I don't know like the full like detailed list of that, right? But I understand what it is. And so just like any good improv, I think understanding the core of it means that when you add on to it using that as your foundation, trust in yourself that the decisions that you make and the things that you say are going to be the right things and the things that are true about your world, right? Everything that exists within the Sublime, from, you know, the radio show to the fact that people transform into animals to the Harbingers existing and like the like all everything about the Sublime are things that me and my friends sat down at a table, played a game, and we said these words that happen to now be true. And we trusted in ourselves to know that they were also going to be right. And as you continue to build your world, as you continue to play new games that are going to add new things to your world building and to your characters and to your story, trust that whatever you are going to say and do is right and true about your world. And in that, go fucking wild. Do what your heart wants you to do. Any world is so multifaceted in ways, right? Like one of the great things about the Sublime is that I can find like a sad tragic sapphic romance right next to like a buddy sitcom at a bowling alley, right next to a kid doing his first radio show, right next to children being thrown in a trunk and driven through a school hallway, right like so many things are true about our own world, and there are so many things that are just happening in the world that we don't know. Allow yourself the freedom to play in the space where anything is possible, bound only by the truth that you know your world to be, and see where that takes you. See where your playfulness takes you. See what emerges from that act of play, either by yourself in solo games or with your friends over duet or more games, I guess. Trust in yourself that you are going to make the right choices, and that the world you will build will still be yours, even if more people and more games are adding to it.
Some great advice.
Hell yeah.
So Kendo, thank you so much for coming to the table. Before we let you get out of here, we do have one more question that we ask every guest who comes on the show, which is, what are you bringing to the table? Which is just our way of asking you for a recommendation of anything. Could be a game, a person, a place, a book, an activity, anything you'd like. What are you bringing to the table?
Bowling. No.
It's going in there. You said it.
It's going in. Oh, yeah. No, hey, fair. I think my suggestion... Oh, I just played... like a quick one shot of Legends of the Mist, the new like rustic fantasy game by the same people who did City of Mist. It's my favorite fantasy game right now. I don't want to be a hater, but it's everything that I wanted out of Daggerheart, but like actually in the game. I've never felt so empowered and. I've never felt so empowered to be as creative as I was in Legends of the Mist because of the theme playbooks allow such variety, and like the kinds of choices that they give makes me like, I feel like I'm building the world and the characters in a way that feels way more intimate. And the options that I get mechanically out of those choices and like the way that they come into play in the game feel, I don't know. It's got the sauce. It's got the sauce in a way that...
It's just got the sauce.
It's got the sauce in a way where sometimes, at least for me, Daggerheart has ketchup. And sometimes I need just like a nice Chipotle sauce with a little bit of spice. And
just spicy mayo.
Like, and I understand why people like Daggerheart, but Legends of the Mist... That's the good shit right there.
Well, shit. Now we got to go read another tabletop
RPG. Now you got to read another tabletop RPG.
Oh, darn. Well. I hate reading tabletop RPGs. Don't make me.
You're going to make me want to play a game with my friends? Fuck you, dude.
Dear Diary. Dang it.
Dang it.
Well, thanks so much, Kendo, for coming to the table. Do you want to let people know where they can find you online and where they can find Tales Yet Told?
Yeah, so you can find me everywhere on the internet that matters at Kendo Makes Films. If you go somewhere and you can't find me, go somewhere that actually matters, I guess. And you can also...
Damn. Coming for most of the internet.
Yeah, I am. Screw you, MySpace. you can also find my actual play podcast, Tales Yet Told, wherever you get your podcasts, and on again any place that actually matters, at Tales Yet Told on Blue Sky at talesyettold.com. And guess what? That website also just works, talesyettold.com. Whoa, look at that. You can also, if you want merch, you can get that at merchyetsold.shop. So do what you want.
Merchyetsold.shop is very good.
That's the reaction I've gotten every time I've said it. So I know it must be true.
If you want more gaming content here from us at Talk of the Table, you can become a member of the Many Sided Media Patreon, where you can get access to ad-free episodes of Talk of the Table, bonus roundtables, plus a whole bunch of other goodies. If you want to help us keep the lights on and keep making cool stuff, head on over to patreon.com/manysidedmedia and check us out. Also, if you want to check out our free bi-monthly newsletter, you can subscribe to the Many Sided newsletter or become a member of the Many Sided Media Discord to talk about this episode and all of our other episodes in a vibrant chat with people who just love talking about games. All those things are linked in our show notes below. As always, rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.